Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
I'm going to make a bold prediction that one of three teams picks him up. I mean,
Which three teams do you think will pick him up?
I think, look, the natural would be if Cam Newton is out, then the natural place to be is to play with Eric in Carolina. I mean, can you imagine? And you've got an owner there.
They both were on the 49ers.
They were both on the 49ers. It's the Carolina
Panthers.
Very good. And Colin Kaepernick.
Testing my sports knowledge
there. I was testing
you. So he wants to play in the NFL again.
He absolutely wants to play. He wants to compete at the highest level. I mean, this is a competitive young man. I'll make the bold prediction. You can save the tape. I think you're going to see within the next 2 weeks that somebody's going to step up. Somebody's going to do the right thing. And you want me to predict too? I will tell you, besides the Panthers, it would not surprise me if Bob Kraft makes a move.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was the voice of Mark Garagos on CNN talking about his client Colin Kaepernick, who settled his collusion case with the NFL over the weekend. Zach Zaidman in for Mully this morning, and we're pleased to welcome in Dan Wetzel, the Yahoo Sports columnist who wrote about Kaepernick and the NFL settlement in his latest column on Yahoo.com. Good morning, Dan. How are you this morning? Oh. Did I just hang up on Dan? He will be back in a second. He wrote a column. This is part of the column that Dan wrote, Zach. Of course, if this thing ever got to trial, Kaepernick's lawyers probably needed only to hold up a picture of Brandon Whedon on the roster of last year's Houston Texans, and they would have immediately received access to Jerry Jones' personal checking account.
Dave, that's a great point. And that's why I think when we bring on Dan, one of the things that I want to know right away is why settle if you felt like you could win taking it to trial?
Good morning, Dan. Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports. How are you? Morning, Dan.
Now you got me.
There we go. Sorry about that.
How are you guys? Yeah, we're good.
Good. Great column on Kaepernick.
Colluding to keep me out. It's all collusion.
That's it. So we read part of your column over the weekend, Dan, and obviously this is a story that got a lot of attention. Why do you think it was settled now, and what was the anything behind the timing of it?
I don't know. I mean, obviously the settlement part is, the NFL did not want to take this to trial. It's really the issue, and they were able to throw up enough money and still offer Kaepernick a chance to play, presumably. So I don't know. The NFL is very hard to win anything from in a lawsuit. They fought, gambling to the end, to the Supreme Court, legalized sports wagering. I mean, they fought Tom Brady, basically was going to go to the Supreme Court over the inflation levels of a football, and he's their most popular player. They have the money to go on a protracted legal fight, and they have the ego to never want to admit anything wrong. So, for Kaepernick to get this to me, a victory for him legally. Now, what was this about? What was his purpose in this case is a whole other question. But for him to get anything out of the NFL is a victory for him. So why did they take it this far and say, forget it, we're going to give up? I do think that they wanted him out of the league for the last couple of years. I don't know whether it was a full collusion or not. And they were able to get him out and have this issue really die down. But now, I think as your deal there with Mark Garagos on whatever show he was on, what happens now? Is someone actually going to sign him? And how much money did they pay out to basically keep him out of the league for 2 years? But he could now be in at this point.
What do you think will happen? What's going to be the ending to this story?
I mean, I assume he's going to be on some kind of team as a player. I mean, if you settle this case and then he doesn't make it anywhere. I mean, look, he's not a coveted starter anymore. And I think in any case, any one of us working for anybody, it's do your positives outweigh your negatives is how you keep your job. And so if you're the top sales guy and you're a pain in the neck, they keep you. If you're not, and something happens, they get rid of you. And I think everybody does that. For Kaepernick, his deal, his negatives were not bigger than the positives, and so they wanted him out. I don't know. I think someone's going to have to probably sign him, or someone. I mean, he's still better than some of these backup quarterbacks. So I think he actually probably gets re-signed, and I kind of feel like the issue will die out. I think everyone's really tired. Mm-hmm. Of the story. I don't think there'd be the media attention of it. If he wants to kneel during the anthem, it'll be a big thing for a few weeks. But I think this kind of issue has kind of evolved into the next stage of this. So I don't think it'll be as big of a deal, but I do suspect someone will grab him, or else can he sue again or things like that. So the timing of this is pretty interesting.
Joined by Yahoo Sports columnist Dan Wetzel on Mully and Haw, Zach Zabin in for Mully today. And Dan, some of the reaction we get this morning is somewhat predictable. I think when you see a settlement and the money and the dollar figures that are estimated have been reported that he will be receiving, I think you put it to, well, closer to $100 million than $1 million, maybe somewhere between 60 and 80, as some reports have indicated. Some people view that as a sellout, that he sold out. And maybe, I think that it's important to make a distinction between the football issue, the collusion issue, and the fact that they didn't want him on their football team, and the NFL owners, and the social stand that he still, that obviously where this all began. Those are two pretty separate things that I think some people want to kind of mix together in light of this news.
Yeah, I mean, look, the thing with this whole story is everyone, there's a million opinions on it. I think the concept of this is kind of nuanced, and what Kaepernick, I don't think Kaepernick ever did a great job really articulating exactly what he was protesting and things like that. But I also think this whole issue just sort of everybody ran to their corners and shouted at each other. So if you didn't like Kaepernick, you're not going to like the settlement. If you do like Kaepernick, you think it's fine. It almost doesn't matter what happens. Everyone's in their spot, and I think that's just kind of where we're at with it for a variety of reasons. So did he sell out? Should he have taken this thing to trial? Should he expose the NFL more? I don't know. It's his lawsuit. That's the thing. If this gets him on the field and that was always his goal, then, I don't know. I got a hard time really criticizing somebody for making that move. But I do think if he gets back and gets to play again, then it'll be interesting to see where the story goes on this. The one thing we've never really heard is anything from Kaepernick. He has not spoken since he basically stopped playing in the NFL. I don't believe he's done any interviews. And so we don't always know what exactly he was looking for out of this. We also don't know what the settlement is. I mean, there were some kind of reports, but there really is nothing by anybody, anybody really credible that says, oh, it was $60 million.
Right.
Or this thing. So my assumption is it's more money than less. But if the NFL was like, hey, you're going to get to play again, but we're going to give you $20 million, and that was what Kaepernick wants, then he may go do that and just say, yeah, that's fine. I'll take even less money on it. So I don't know. There's so much to go, but the thing with Kaepernick is no matter what happens, it's just everybody just retreats to their corners and not a whole lot. There's a lot of yelling and not a lot of listening on either side. I think that was always kind of the unfortunate part on this, because you could be totally in favor of Kaepernick and it doesn't mean you're anti-American flag or anti-troops or things like that. And you could be upset with Kaepernick and it doesn't mean, because you have a certain opinion that you should honor the flag or the anthem, that you're just all of a sudden a racist. So it's just sort of like everybody got pushed into corners. And I think there's a lot more common ground on this than, probably will ever be allowed.
I agree with you, but the president did try to make it into a wedge issue. There's no question about that. So what would be the infrastructure in place for the National Football League. If a team signs Colin Kaepernick to give him the right to compete for a roster spot this offseason, you know that it will those issues will bubble up again starting at the White House on the way down. What's the NFL's plan to deal with it when it happens, because they panicked last time it happened?
They totally panicked, and they still never came up with any. Remember this year it was like, yeah, you can protest, but you have to stay in the locker room.
Yeah.
So you're not kneeling on the sideline, but you're kneeling in the locker room. But then it just becomes you didn't come out. Like, they've never been able to figure this thing out. The NBA, which is a far more progressive league, I would think, and really it applauds its players taking stands. They make you stand. And that's kind of my thing. Like, the NFL just never could get around and just say, everybody's got to stand. This is it. You're at work, and this is what you have to do. Okay? If you work at a retail place, you can't wear a hat that says, you know, whatever. You can't wear a Make America Great Again hat, and you can't wear a hat that says, you know, whatever the opposite is at this point, because you're working at the store, and we have customers. So it's not unusual for people to say, hey, look, this is you're at work. This is the uniform. This is what you wear. You can't do this, that, and other thing. But they never were able to do that. There's such a lack of leadership and panic. And I find it just amusing that the NBA handled it fine, even though I think Adam Silver's and, you know, they basically, those players can speak out and have much bigger platforms and do pretty much anything they want. But when that anthem's playing, they have to stand. And so I think the NFL needs to find a backbone to do it, but Goodell's done a poor job organizing these owners. So it keeps bubbling back up. I really felt like last year when they came up with that policy, it gave them like a week of bad publicity. When I just don't think people really talk that much about this anymore. Trump obviously tries to flame it up for his benefit, but for the most part, I think most sports fans are kind of over this issue. It's been 3 years now, and again, no common ground has ever ceded one way or the other.
So quickly, before we let you go, Dan, how will history remember Colin Kaepernick in terms of being a pioneer, in terms of being a guy who in what context will history remember him?
I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting, and maybe this last chapter will decide some of that. In general, I think it'll probably be more sympathetic to him. I think you kind of seen some of that. You know, at its time, most of these guys who are protesting, Muhammad Ali was not popular at the time. Now he's beloved by almost anyone. I mean, even Martin Luther King was extremely unpopular at the time of his death. So usually history will some of the smaller things that people point to and say, yeah, but, or I don't like this guy because of that, usually fade away and the grander message is kept. So I would imagine Kaepernick does well historically, but you're talking decades on that. And who really knows? But I do think we're back to a pretty interesting situation here where what happens to Colin Kaepernick now? Does he play again? Does the NFL put down a rule? Does he take a knee again? Does anybody care after the first week or two? I really feel like that's the thing. I mean, let's say he does go to New England, which I don't think he will, but let's say he does go to New England. I really just don't see that as possible, but he's there. I don't know what he does. I mean, Patriots usually stand, but let's say he takes a knee for after the second or third week. Do you really care what the backup quarterback
right.
of New England's doing?
Right.
You know, I think it just dies out. So we'll see. It'll be interesting.
Great stuff, Dan. Thank you. Good column on yahoosports.com. Appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports talking about Colin Kaepernick. Really good column, really good insight. He is a guy who's really plugged in.
Totally agree. I do think the one thing I that drives me crazy is when I hear people saying, Kaepernick, he stinks as a quarterback. He might not be elite level. You know, he's not Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't stink as a quarterback. There's a place for him to compete for a spot for an NFL roster.
7:18 on the score on this Monday morning. When we get back, we will talk about Zach's interview with Robbie Gould Sunday night with Tom Thayer. But first, a check of traffic with Jill Erchek. Good morning, Jill.
A lot of it has to do with just kind of being in the moment, right? And understanding, like,
this is a business. And at the end of the day, it's a business for everybody, you know? And you just have to kind of roll with the punches.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That was the voice of Robbie Gould, and he was giving his thoughts on a lot of things in an interview on Sunday night on this very radio station with Zach Zabin and Tom Thayer. And Zach Zabin just happens to be here filling in for Mully this morning. And nice job booking Robbie. That is a guy that does not necessarily want to come on and talk about the things that everybody wants to talk about, but that never backs away from a question. Before we get to the specific answer to your specific question, what was your overall feeling about the way he handled, way he has handled the speculation about his future?
I think he's been a professional through and through. And I think that he's a better kicker today than he was when the Bears cut him.
And he's 36.
Right. And he admitted that. Now, he did something smart, which is after the year he spent with the Giants, he went to a place with warmer weather to benefit him. I think he's learned a lot from Adam Vinatieri and how Vinatieri's been able to extend his career. And I think kicking indoors helped Vinatieri after all those years outdoors in New England. Same thing with Robbie Gould in Chicago. The Bears have done a poor job replacing Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he was cut for performance reasons. I think he was cut for personality reasons. I don't think he was cut for financial reasons. I just think that
they'd had enough.
Yeah, and I think it's been proven that the staff that fell out of favor, that staff isn't a good staff. You know, the head coach is not a head coach in the league anymore.
Right.
And I would make the case that the special teams coordinator back then has not had success since leaving the Bears. Robbie has had a ton of success because the thing that I think it's not just kicking in the conditions at Soldier Field. It's being able to kick in those conditions in big moments. And the guys that they've tried to replace Gould with over the last few years have not been able to do that successfully.
I like the way Robbie has been gracious talking about Cody Parkey. He has answered every question the right way. He was at that game. He doesn't deny it. And he's also has spoken with some empathy when discussing Parkey's future. You asked him the question that everybody wants to know about possibly coming back to the Bears.
I can't answer that question. You know, it's, and this is what I tell people, you know, it's really out of my control at this point. You know, I think I have only the exclusive rights to talk to the San Francisco 49ers right now. And they're the only team that can really get a deal done with me before free agency. And then free agency opens up, I think, March 11th or something like that. So, you know, and then you just field phone calls and you figure it out. You know, I've been through this before a couple of years ago, and when that March 11th deadline opens up and hits and, you know, the no tampering period window opens, it's kind of a free-for-all, and you're trying to make decisions that are best for your family, and you're trying to make decisions that, you know, kind of fits where you want to go for the next part of your career. And I would tell you that, you know, Cody's obviously the kicker for the Chicago Bears, you know what I mean? So they have a lot of things that they'd have to do in order for it to work. And those are all things that you never know what's going to happen, right? So, you know, we're all ears if we get to that March 11th time, and we'll take it in stride, and we definitely consider all opportunities when we get to that free agent part. For sure.
So that's Robbie Gould answering your question on Sunday night when you were in with Tom Thayer. And, Zach, it's fun to consider and it's fun to speculate. And the Bears, as I've written and we've talked about, are one kicker away from being a Super Bowl contender. But fact remains, beginning tomorrow, teams can designate players as their franchise player. They can put the tag on them. Why wouldn't the San Francisco 49ers tag a kicker to spend $5 million, essentially what it would cost to tag him and keep him in San Francisco?
It's idiotic to franchise tag the kicker, especially when you're a team.
I wouldn't say idiotic.
It's idiotic. Come on. And the thing that
how can you say that in Chicago, where you just were one kicker away from advancing in the playoffs?
We're not talking about the Bears.
Okay.
We're talking about the 49ers. And this is a team that reportedly is in the mix to try and trade for Antonio Brown. I mean, there's a totally different situation there. You're not tagging the kicker. doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint to do that. However, here's the most important thing that people want to know is Robbie Gould going to return to Chicago?
Right.
Cody Parkey, even if you cut him, and it appears just based on the comments from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy after the Today Show appearance, he's gone, right? They're going to say goodbye at some
point. Can't see a scenario where he returns.
But they still gave him $9.5 million guaranteed.
Okay.
So
speaking of idiotic.
And exactly. So that being said, if Cody Parkey is worth $9.5 million, a kicker that's hitting the market like Robbie Gould is going to attempt at least to make more money guaranteed.
I'm not arguing that.
Than Cody Parkey.
And I think he's worth it.
Okay.
For this team. But in this time.
I don't think the Bears have the ability to do that from a financial standpoint. And I do think there are other teams that fit the criteria that Robbie talked about, where teams that are able to win, where you might have either a warm weather or a dome situation, and the flexibility to pay him.
I don't know, Zach. I mean, you know him as well as anybody in the media, but and you've heard everything that he has said. How would you say what you have said if you're Robbie Gould about he's building a house, his family is here, this is the headquarters, he wants a Bear for life? That's the way he ended the interview with Thayer.
Yes.
They're both Bears for life. I thought they were going to have a group hug if they would be in the room.
But there's also the business of the National Football League.
Okay.
You don't know. The 49ers could offer him a very lucrative deal. They don't have to franchise tag him. They can offer him a very lucrative deal.
I think that if he hits free agency, he's coming back to Chicago. My question is not whether that as much as it will he hit free agency. I really think it's not idiotic as you're making it sound.
I think if he hits free agency, then if you really want to start looking at situations around the National Football League, I can think of one right in the NFC North.
Okay.
That the Bears can't compete with, and that's the Minnesota Vikings, who have had a number of big-time kicking issues over the last few seasons. They kick indoors, and that's a team just like the Bears that's on the cusp of making that breakthrough.
Yes and no. I just don't. I think you're separating. You're ignoring, and maybe you know something. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're holding out on us here. Because how are you ignoring all the stuff that Robbie Gould has said about to Earl Bennett and since the season ended? And if I were a San Francisco 49er employee or a front office official, I'd be ticked off at how my kicker has sounded like he wants to be in Chicago, and yet we have the contractual ability to keep him in San Francisco.
You can't. Joe Montana ended his career with the Kansas City Chiefs. It didn't mean that he wasn't a 49er for life. That's the reality of the NFL. So I think they understand what Chicago has meant to Robbie Gould's life. But you know, he's been a really, really, really good kicker.
I think
for
if
the
he hits
49ers.
Free agency, he's a Bear. I just don't know that he's going to hit free agency.
Zach, especially because his family lives here. I mean, I heard him yesterday. I heard the interview. It was well done, by the way. While I was driving last night, and, you know, he's going to get a thermostat for his house, whatever. I mean, you know, the family's here. The kids are here. He's obviously entrenched here in Chicago. That's got to mean something if he does hit that market.
Of course it means something. But, you know, money means something, too. And I think if the 49ers can give him a deal today that may keep him off the market. You don't know. I think he was very honest in his – he doesn't know. But you know that he loves Chicago. Of course he would welcome the opportunity to come back to the Bears if they wanted him back. He understands what the special teams coordinator is all about. It's a different guy, Chris Tabor, who was here as an assistant when he was here. The Bears clearly need a kicker. It's a huge need. Mm-hmm. He's been fantastic at Soldier Field over the course of his career, and the Bears are on the cusp of being a special team. So, yeah, it makes sense. I just think they're teams that can give him more money.
Texter telling me to stop being a fan.
I'd like to pre-sign Robbie for like 5 years from now for the Score Bears pre- and post-game show. Can we do that?
5 years? How about 5 months?
Whenever he's
doing it while he's under contract with the Bears.
We could reunite Pat Manley and Robbie Gould right here on these very airwaves. What do you think?
Cubs win. Gordon Whittenmeyer taking you inside the Cubs clubhouse. Cubs win. Chicago Cubs. Yeah. The Chicago Sun-Times. Gordon Whittenmeyer.
Morning, Haw. Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. Zach Zaman in for Mully today. We head out to Arizona to check in with Gordon Whittenmeyer from the Sun-Times. Good morning, Gordon. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
It's early. It's early. A lot of anticipation out there. What would you what would you expect to hear from Tom Ricketts today, and why has it taken him this long to publicly speak about his father's racist emails?
Well, to answer the second one first, I suspect that has to do with the timing. He came out with a statement immediately. He met with the Muslim group in town right afterwards, immediately afterwards. And then this is the first time he'll be with the team since then. He was scheduled to meet with the media anyway. So my guess is that they just decided, well, he'll get asked about it at this point regardless. So, you know, make that the time when he answers questions. And what do I expect to hear? Similar to the statement, and I don't know if it would be stronger because Theo's language was so much stronger when camp opened. He may follow that lead to some extent, but I would imagine that this will be heavier on trying to distance the team and what the team represents from his father, and try to point out that his father is not involved in the daily operations of the team, nor maybe even the broader character of the team, something along those lines. That would only be a partial truth.
Yeah, it's a complicated day because you have to address the Joe Ricketts emails, the Addison Russell situation, the new network, and then there's the baseball part of it. From the baseball side of things.
The what part?
Yeah, exactly. But Gordon, from the base, there are a lot of questions about the actual baseball. What are the biggest things from the baseball part of it that you need to hear from Tom Ricketts?
Well, the baseball side of it from ownership is, where the hell's the money? I mean, I thought this was going to be a team that competed at the top of the food chain when it came to revenues, especially after we saw all the increased revenues with the winning, all the price hikes involved with the winning, the TV deal on the horizon. And I know their payroll is high. I know it's always among the highest. Their revenues have always been among the highest, but they were going to supercharge that. They were going to be a mammoth. They were going to be the Yankees of the Midwest. So what happens when your offense breaks, as Theo said, in the second half last year, when you clearly have young players that could go either way and a need where a marquee free agent who's out there and available, and by the way, still is, could fix what broke, and you don't even allow your team to be in play for that. And on top of that, there's another layer to a player like Bryce Harper if you were to go get him. People want to say, well, 10 years is crazy money. Go get somebody else. You're in a narrow window of opportunity here to win. And you've got a TV deal coming. This guy is incredibly marketable. He's a national figure. And if you could lock him up for X number of years, you don't think that's going to have an influence on some of your broadcast partners or some of the people that might balk at some of the carriage fees? This could be a great investment on a number of levels.
Joined by Gordon,
doing it.
Gordon Whitmire from the Sun-Times out in Arizona covering the Cubs. Gordon, you were in the room on Friday when Addison Russell held his news conference and spoke about his suspension for domestic abuse. If we're at the bottom of the second before the press conference, as Theo Epstein alluded to in terms of the progress that Addison has made in his recovery, where are we now after the press conference?
Well, I think in the terms of what the Cubs might be thinking, it's probably a leap all the way toward the sixth inning, because in their minds, I think this first public appearance by him was maybe the greatest benchmark. I mean, really, it's potentially the only benchmark you could have to measure whether he's checking the so-called boxes before you make a decision on whether to cut him before the season or not. What else is there in terms of addressing this issue? Unless there's a relapse. So as far as any positive steps forward for him in their thinking on what their decision's going to be, that was the big one. And as far as what I saw, I mean, I saw the same thing you guys did. There wasn't any emotion there. It was all prepared. He had three or four stock answers to every question and tried to shoehorn those answers into whatever question he got. It didn't matter what the question was. There were attempts to be very specific with him, and he completely went the other way on that. I thought the one thing he could have done, because he's not going to win that press conference. There's no winning a press conference like that. It's horrible and negative all the way around, no matter what. And many people feel that the fact that he's even in a Cubs uniform for spring training, given a press conference like that, is the wrong thing. And I don't disagree with that. But the one thing he could have done that I did not hear was when he was asked about some of the specifics, and not going into details wasn't going to help him. But how do you not understand that that part of the step forward in this, the only thing you can do to suggest that you've made any change in your thinking at all, is to at least surrender the power of the facts to her. At least pull yourself out of it completely in terms of having any ground at all to stand on. And if somebody's asking, was what she wrote true? Were you physical with her? And then some of the other specific questions that came, at least acknowledge that you're not going to deny any of that, that you stand by her facts, her truth. And I didn't see anything close to that.
Gordon, Zach and I have both been in those situations, as you have. After the press conference, you look back and you think, okay, I wish I would have asked him this. In retrospect, was there anything not asked, whether it's you or somebody else, of Addison Russell that you wish would have been?
There were some questions that might have been asked a little differently to try to evoke an answer that got off script. But I don't, and many of us have talked about it after the fact. Well, what could we have done to get him off that script?
Mm-hmm.
Was there a way to ask some of those questions? And I don't think there was, because I thought our columnist, Rick Morrissey, I thought he did a pretty good job of asking some just basic factual things that were kind of off the path of did you or didn't you, are you sorry, aren't you sorry, you know, asking him if he's in another relationship, how that relationship's going, asking him, and somebody else asked him what his relationship is like with his ex-wife now, things like that might at least allow him a half step off the script, and he really didn't do a good job of going anywhere with that. So I don't think that there were other questions or ways of asking them. It wasn't going to change that script. Now, I know some of the criticism out there that I've been hearing or reading about involves, well, why didn't you ask him about the child support from the previous mother of his child? And because that's a cul-de-sac off of a different road. I mean, that's not relevant to this case. MLB didn't investigate that. That's a far, as despicable as that might be, that's a far lower priority than the physical abuse and the charges that were levied by his ex-wife and investigated by MLB. That was the point of that press conference. And to go in other directions would be almost distractions from that point. And that's not to say that in a larger sense, at some point, or if this thing grows, that doesn't become part of it. But in this case, I don't think that was part of it. Hello?
Yeah, Gordon, I want to veer in a different direction here, because ultimately, getting back to the Bryce Harper point that you were making, which was very compelling, I start thinking to myself, yes, the Cubs have their own network coming up. This is a guy who is made for TV. And then he's still available right now. And I look around Major League Baseball and I see the Dodgers, the Astros, the Yankees, the Mets, the Twins, the Blue Jays, just a few of the teams out there that have their own networks, kind of similar to what the Cubs are going to be starting next season. Why is Bryce Harper still on the market?
Well, do you believe in collusion? Do you believe in algorithms? I don't know if you saw what Brad Brock said the other day about his free agency experience. And then I think it was echoed by Mark Reynolds maybe a day or two later.
About all the offers being alike?
All the offers are the same, and they all come in at the same time.
Yep.
I mean, that's
on its face from a distance without knowing anything more than that, boy, that sure looks like collusion. Now, Brock said that he asked teams about that, and they said, well, we've got an algorithm, and here's where you fall on the scale. But his point, which I think is a valid one, well, you would think that different teams would have different algorithms. So what's going on? Why is the timing the same? What are teams waiting for? And I don't know all the facts on this. I mean, the first question that arises in my mind is, does it coincide with any sort of baseball financial calendar? You know, when money's due or when financial years begin or end, when money counts against your luxury tax level. I mean, I'd have to dive into all that to see if there's some key dates that might align with when some of these offers are coming in. But it's a mess. It's a mess. And from budgetary standpoints, ownership standpoints, and now it seems baseball operations leadership standpoints, you're seeing these players treated almost like interchangeable widgets or something. You know, this guy's got this skill set and whatever. And you're forgetting that some of these guys are faces of the teams, potential faces of the game. You're also, there's two elements that you're leaving out of this. One is that players are not just labor like another industry. They are the game. And so if revenues are up, their salaries should go up commensurate to that. And the owners should not be gaining a disproportionate increase. The other side of it is the fans. Can you imagine if Javi Baez, Francisco Lindor get down the road here toward free agency and all of a sudden they're year-to-year players and they're bouncing all over the place? And eventually, you know, somebody's algorithm says that Javi's lost a step, so he's going to get a discount or a cut off the last year, and his offers are going to come in January and maybe even February. Those are the two of the most popular players in the game. They're the next generation. They're the faces that are going to bring the next generation into the game, and are actually doing a pretty good job of that right now. And I think Bryce Harper's one of those types of players. And for you not to acknowledge that within the framework of your sort of, I guess, employment structure is really hurting yourself. And I think that's what baseball is doing. And I think it's taking them in a pretty destructive place here in the next few years if they don't rectify it right away.
Good stuff, Gordon. Thank you. Have a great day.
All right, guys. Take it easy.
Gordon Whitmire covers the Cubs for the Chicago Sun-Times. Look forward to his story later on suntimes.com on Tom Ricketts' address to the media later this morning. When we come back on Mully and Haw here with Zach Zabin in for Mully, we'll talk to Megan Malwicki from CBS Chicago. She was there Friday as well, and she asked a couple interesting questions, and her perspective is worth hearing. Mully and Haw with Zach Zabin in for Mully on 670 The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.